And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT. I'm Phil Taylor. We are going to be this, let's call this the holiday edition. And we have, for this period, we decided we want to talk about the stories that we should be following. We're going to have Phil Conlon with us, and long-term listeners to the Taylor Report will be glad to be hearing from Phil. And Tony Leah is of Unifor is also going to be joining us. The topics we want to make sure we cover today, we're going to have something to say about this potential war, the bad relations developing around the issue of Taiwan. It is a story that people are sort of aware of, but the hazards of it are not well understood. So we'll talk about Taiwan. We're going to also go back to the matter of the Australians. There are new alliance with the U.S. involving nuclear submarines. There's also another border issue, which we believe could turn into something, Iran-Azerbaijan. So that will be other matters. And we're going to be asking Phil about the Philippines. It'll be Phil asking Phil about the Philippines, where there's a presidential election coming. And we'll see. We may have something to say about the Green Party debacle. So, well, Tony and Phil, welcome to the show.
Hello,
glad
Phil.
To be here.
All right. What I'm reading, the story that I really think you guys are veteran trade unionists, and you can help us out with this, is that while there has been great progress made in getting the population vaccinated and protected and from COVID-19, there are issues, very serious ones, and ones that people need clarification on. Various unions are now being told there's a mandate, and actually, I don't know that the unions are being told. The employees are being told, well, you will do this, and you will have your vaccination, or you won't be working. That is not easy to digest if for organized labor. And so I need to ask, and I'll start with you, Phil, I guess, is where's the rub here for unions? Why isn't this kind of an automatic, easy to do thing?
Well, I think it could have been an easy to do thing if unions had been made part of the discussion right from day one. And sometimes people like to say we're all in this together, and we say whatever. But, you know, sometimes, we got to all be in this together. And this is one of those cases. But how did the government of Ontario treat unions when the COVID emergency hit? The first thing they did was pass all kinds of executive orders taking away from healthcare workers and their unions all kinds of hard-won rights. You can't have any collective agreement provision about scheduling, vacations, hours of work, overtime assignments. They're all out the window. The boss can do what he wants. And by the way, your grievance procedure is out the window too. And that was like, it wasn't even a week after COVID started that Doug Ford did that. And of course, every union noticed that. And we figure, okay, I know what Doug's up to. They don't like unions, and now they're going to make it really, you're going to take away hard-fought gains, just like with a stroke of a pen. And it was just a stroke of a pen. So that's how it started out. And, you know, as you've seen the whole COVID crisis develop and the vaccines come on the market, and there wasn't enough for everybody, and who was supposed to get it, and then there is enough for everybody. And now you can get everybody vaccinated. And now you find out there's a group of people out there in society who don't want to get vaccinated. And some of those people are in unions, are in unionized workplaces. And there has been, up to this point, not a lot of love shown by the employers toward their unionized workers and towards their union organizations, saying, well, can you guys help us? Can we work together on this? Yeah, now, all of a sudden, yeah.
There's complementary other issues that tie in here with this business of management and their attitude towards labor. on the one hand, everybody would, they want to put up the sign hero, but they don't want to talk about hours. They don't want to talk about increasing the pay, because look at this crisis has shown how valuable every worker is, particularly the hands-on workers, the ones who actually have to go into the buildings and have to lift things and pull things and look after patients and drive the buses, et cetera. And I think they talk themselves into a corner, because what we're actually seeing is the value of labor. And they want power where they talk out of both sides of their mouths, how much they love the workers, but they don't want to actually interact with them and give them the hours, give them the kind of pay that they should have had long ago, not just while they're discovering now, oh yeah, they really are valuable, aren't they?
Well, and Phil, if I can give you a real illustration of that, at the time of COVID, the public service in Ontario was reeling from something called Bill 124, which was a money grab by Doug Ford, and it restricts broadly the bargaining rights of all unions that are on the public payroll, whether or not they're direct civil servants or they work for social service agencies or hospitals. So the nurses contract comes up, and the nurses are having they're having burnout. They're working killing hours of overtime. They're having members of their profession leave the profession because they can't deal with it anymore. So there's a massive nurse shortage now. And so the nurses can't get the Ontario Hospital Association to settle for a decent raise. And so what happens is that they have to go to an arbitrator, and the arbitrator says, sorry, I can't give you any money. I'll give you 1%, because Doug Ford said you can have 1%. Very generous guy, Doug. But I can't give you any more than that, because that's the law. And the nurses say, this is a scam. People keep saying that we're heroic, that we're so valuable and all that sort of stuff. But we're not even allowed to negotiate to get a decent pay raise, you know. By the way, the Bill 124 lasts for 3 years. Everybody has to take 1% and no more than 1%. He can take less. And then next year, more of the same. And the year after that, more of the same, you know. And that's a very bitter pill to swallow, especially if you're a nurse working under these horrific conditions that they're working under. You know, don't forget, during SARS, nurses died, hospital workers died in great numbers. And in the early days of COVID, we had a lot of deaths in not so much in hospitals, but in nursing homes of staff, right? So this is for keeps. And yet you can't get any kind of respect from the government, who controls the purse strings, on any of this stuff. And there's no consultation with the unions there. So it's not surprising that a lot of unions are kicking back on some of the regulations that are coming down now, which are tough regulations.
Yeah, I saw the leader of PSAC being interviewed, and I thought he made a very good point, because they were on his case, because he has, of course, representing members who have refusing for one reason or another, not a large number. By the way, he kept saying over and over, let's understand something. Our union wants people to get vaccinated. Now, we are 100% in favor, and we're working to help people understand that it is make a safer workplace. But he says, you know, we have issues. You make a decision like this, and you just, becomes your magic word, mandate. But we have workplaces where you're telling us we have no choice. Meantime, contract workers are coming in who are not under your mandate. So, you know, he's trying to make them understand we're the ones actually doing the work. And we actually see the guys coming and going who, because of your bureaucratic way of doing this, you didn't consult us. If we had talked about it, that could have been we could have worked out a solution where those people coming in with contract would also be under the mandate. So that fair is fair, right? And also our members wouldn't be at any risk. But what we're dealing with, it strikes me, is just a really demonstration of the naked capitalist, is that this idea that power this could be diffused and consultation, those are all dirty words to them. If one thing lesson ought to be learned, I think we have, and Tony can tell us about this, that I think maybe, what is it, 30% of the workforce is organized? In other words, you know, the daily laborers of the Canada, there's about, I think it's 30%, maybe higher, maybe less, but it ought to be 80, 100%. Everybody ought to have some kind of representation, because otherwise it's you, one, against the boss who owns the place, and he will tell you, you need representation. But let's bring Tony in on that, even on the simple statistic. What percentage of workforce is organized, Tony?
It is about 30% in Canada. It's lower in the private sector and higher among in the public sector. But yeah, it's a figure that should be much higher, because that is the only effective way that workers can have their voice heard. And on the issue of COVID, the starting point has to be to remember that corporations have not protected the health and safety of their workers in this pandemic. We can remember back to the beginning when there were outbreaks in meatpacking plants, as well as long-term care homes. There were hundreds and hundreds of workers infected in Amazon warehouses and other warehouse workers. There was a great reluctance on the part of private companies to allow workers to be at home to prevent the spread of the virus in the early days of it, and be paid, which is what was required. But that was going to cost too much money. And those employers also pushed to get workers back to work before it was safe, so that they could continue to exploit those workers. So workers know that their employers, their bosses, were not out to defend them, to protect them. So why should they accept now, unquestioningly, greater power for their bosses to implement mandates and threaten them with losing their livelihood by firing them? Consultation has to be right. The voice of the workers has to be heard if we're going to protect workers. It can't just be a mandate that gives more power to employers or more power to governments to take away rights from workers. And the unions that understand that have been supporting vaccination, but arguing for the voice of workers and unions to be heard. Unfortunately, I want to say something about my union, Unifor, because it's led by a president who likes to shoot his mouth off without thinking very much and sound like a big tough guy, Jerry Dias. And so his statement on mandatory vaccinations was basically to say the employers have the right, so you better do what they say. And unfortunately, it's part of the mindset that has infected some part of the labor movement, including Unifor, to defer always to management, to corporations. So this is what Jerry said. Unions need to be more honest. Our lawyers have checked this thing out. And the bottom line is, if an employer comes out with a mandatory vaccination policy, unless you have a bona fide medical reason, it will be deemed legitimate for the employer to demand mandatory vaccinations. If I'm telling people not to get vaccinated and they get fired, they'll stay fired. Now, this is not
why
a policy that's based on respecting workers and giving them a voice. This is a policy based on saying, you better do what the employer says, because if you get fired, you'll stay fired. In other words, he's not going to protect his members. I don't think that's the right way to go.
I think it's a very important point. By the way, that is within our society is also being pointed out by this, by the wiser elements who are talking about we need cooperation. It is something that needs to be done. But if you try to do it by what they call shaming or bullying, that is not a good course. And part of our problem is we inherit a society, private ownership, and a narrow power at the top. And so it's a command system. And organized labor is a built-in argument against the command system, because it demands respect. It says health and safety, a living wage, all those things. By the way, going back to health and safety, labor has fought for health and safety. It fought for the Medicare for everybody, fought for all the other things, fought for dental, and you know, and so of course, it means that they are very qualified to know what the issues are and to help get a unified message across. But the voice has to come from labor itself. And when they say, look, if you're going to talk over my head to my members, you're actually going to undermine our ability to represent them. And you're actually almost using this power, as Phil alluded earlier, to undermine the power of organized labor. Labor is an ally in the fight against COVID. There's really no question. Right across the Canadian Labor Congress, Ontario Federation of Labor, the whole shooting match from one side of the country to the other, and in the US and around the world. Actually, Tony, you and I talked about Australia, where people tried to misrepresent the unions of Australia by saying a demonstration happened at one local headquarters. Totally misrepresented the story and tried to turn it into labor versus vaccines, when exactly the opposite was true. Organized labor of Australia was for the vaccine. But inevitably, you have to come back to the struggle for equality between working people and the capitalist class. And frankly, we could just as well, if you're a socialist, say, we really don't need the capitalist class. But what we do, we fundamentally, unions have to be fighting for a space in which they get to say to the employer, here's what we want. We want vaccine. Here's how we want to do this. But you notice where you are there is the prime minister and the capitalist parties, and certainly the monopolies saying, no, we have to have complete control over this. We can't, don't start, because the more you respect labor and the more you actually say, yes, every citizen has to have Medicare and all that, the more power you are putting into the hands of workers. And that is forbidden. It's okay if the Queen says, I want them all to get vaccinations, then everybody says, that's good. The Queen wants it, we're all gonna do it. But if labor says we want it, it's not, they don't wanna do it that way. Phil, did you have further on that, on this matter of how unions are coping? By the way, for all the discussion, even with PSAC, it seems to me that the position of the organized labor is fairly stable in this. I haven't actually seen any kind of breaking of ranks or big arguments between organized labor. Anybody aware of any?
No, I think it is stable. I think there have been isolated cases of some union leaders who've kind of gotten off track, and they're getting a lot of press when they do that. All of a sudden, the press wants to hear from a leader of labor when this a particular labor leader is not saying something that's not so wonderful. But really, there's very little of that, and I mean, the job of the labor movement is to look after the welfare and interests of its members. So we understand getting everybody vaccinated and protecting public health is in the interests of the members, the people who belong to labor unions. I mean, so why would unions be in any way objecting to taking steps to keep everybody healthy? But it's some employers take a commanding approach. We're going to tell you what you're going to do. We don't care what you think. And if you don't do it, we have all these disciplinary sanctions here for you. I mean, it's funny. They love writing memos and to the workers, and they always end up saying, you know, failure to obey could lead to a disciplinary response up to and including dismissal. And they take that same form letter out of the hopper because they send it to everybody on every occasion. And they start telling people, well, if you don't get vaccinated, we're going to be disciplined, blah, blah, blah. I say, well, then wait a minute. Why do you want to fire somebody who might be often is a perfectly good worker because this person is going to decline to take part in a vaccine when this might not even be an issue in 6 months, right? So I think some of the more reasonable employers are saying, well, maybe you're right. Maybe we don't need to fire people, but some of them are really, really gung-ho on firing people.
But you know, you also, that again points up the value of the grievance system. Somebody says, oh, well, you know, so-and-so is wrong and all that. Yes, that's true. Maybe he is wrong. But what you argue is make the case, have the hearing, have the discussion. That's a rational process. It's not dictate. He says that he's been, you know, consulting with his religious advisor, or he's been reading a book about something. All right, let him come and bring it. But you can't start by saying, oh, he's an idiot. I'm not going to represent him. What you say is, this is the case. And then it's heard and it's decided. People say, oh, it's a foregone conclusion. Yeah, but it's a rational process. That's why we don't have violence. That's why people say, you had your hearing, you know, you made the argument, you got representation, that's healthy. And whether or not it was the genius or a fool doesn't really matter. You have a process. And again, I believe that what we should be coming out of this COVID thing with is we need more organization. We need broader unions. And the OFL-CLC, Metro Labor, everybody, Unifor, they should all be saying, get it, anybody working wage laborer, get them in a union. And the people who represent, you know, who go in to get elected to legislatures, that should be their mission. Make it, get the obstacles out of the way of organizing and make it, because we all know the great turning points in labor organizing in history was when, due to the activity of unions, workers, some politicians got the message and said, we're going to have to change this law. And we all, you know, this great story is the Roosevelt administration, under great pressure from the CIO, said, yes, rewrite it so that people can become members without ending up in jail or having their homes taken away from them or being beaten up by private cops. You know, that would help. And that's where we are at the moment. Labor has done everything to keep society rolling in a terrible situation. And now we need organizations. They need representation. Everybody does. Any rate, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. And I think we've covered that matter. We can take a little break and come back and talk about some other issues. And we might return to this topic too.